working on him!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Yeah, here we go. Another Brock and Salk podcast. Hi, Brock. Hello. Good morning, good afternoon. We're doing this in the afternoon.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night.
Yes, all right, see you later. There goes another Brock and Salk podcast. Covered the draft and everything else. Goodbye.
Oh, I thought that was a parallel to the Mariners in Houston.
Oh.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night.
Yes. Oh, that was quick. That's not very nice.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. That was not untrue. Which is
Miami and in Tampa.
At time of taping, the Mariners still have not scored in Houston. We will see if that changes when this is released.
Yeah, I can't wait to see who comes out with Houston. We have a problem. Will somebody do that tomorrow? Chris Egan, can we get on King 5 News, King 5 Sports, and see if Chris Egan goes, Houston, we have a problem?
Yeah. Maybe. Well, I'm excited to talk about this a little later because I hear Howdy's in a great place.
No, you know what? Howdy's
talking about the Mariners.
Yeah, we're going to turn Howdy's mic off, I think, for a while.
I will not be talking about the Mariners. No
Howdy's
thanks.
Howdy's in a great place in the sense that he's emboldened.
Nobody's ready to be talking about the Mariners right now.
Not the way Howdy wants to talk about them. That's for darn sure. I've been talking about maybe there's a little bit of uneasiness, not quite, concern, definitely not panic. Howdy's gone past panic. He's on to next year. He's on to 2023.
We are not ready to have this conversation.
All right. Well, we'll leave you over there then. Can we talk about the Seahawks draft then? Because surely, Howdy and everyone else, you must be excited. This is, a completely different style of draft class than they've had in a while. Starting with Charles Cross, a position of need, one of the consensus three best tackles available. Continuing through with an actual pass rusher who plays outside linebacker, a running back that Brock loves, and we can talk a little bit more about Ken Walker, but okay. And then another tackle. I mean, like, corners late, big guys early, corners late, specifically guys that fit your scheme, new schemes on both offense and defense. Brock, this is like a parallel universe here.
It wasn't cute. It wasn't outside the box. We actually knew the names of everyone they drafted. There was not hardly a sniff of a trade other than one, in the fifth round or so to make a move there. They were, can I say it? They were traditional. They did what so much the rest of this league has done through some of these drafts, for better or worse. Not every team has nailed the draft. We know it's a crapshoot. We talked a whole lot about that last week, but it was conventional. It was traditional. And it was outside the norm of what we have experienced in years past.
Yeah. Do you remember the first three drafts, right? The three drafts that set up the Seahawks' success, 2010, 11, and 12. We know the players they got there. And I mean, we all know the names, right? Whether it was Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, Russell Okung, all of the guys that they drafted, and KJ Wright. I mean, it was ridiculous how well they did in those first 3 years of the draft. Do you remember whether they felt traditional at the time? I know both Okung and Earl Thomas did. Those were both traditional. I mean, those were both
a little. I mean, they were wild card picks, but they were not the most, especially Earl Thomas.
We were looking at Taylor Mays,
especially Earl Thomas.
But the position was not odd at 14.
No.
He was one of the guys who was.
They were going to go safety,
right? And we knew that they were going to go with an offensive lineman. We weren't sure if it would be Trent Williams, right? And there were a couple guys who were available. They ended up, I think, he was the best one available at the time. You know, the next year, probably the Bruce Irvin pick was the strangest of any of them.
Oh, that 2012 was panned. That was D minus to Walter Football F. So that one was not traditional. It was not conventional. It was not by the book. It was Bobby Wagner's. Didn't even get invited to the combine. Bruce Irvin had been to 19 junior colleges. Didn't even have a position. So 2012 was definitely panned and definitely outside the norm.
And what about 2011?
2011 was James Carpenter in the first round.
Right, I
John
remember
Moffitt
that.
In the third, because they didn't have a second round pick.
Who
and
was
then
supposed
KJ
to be a
Wright,
sure
Chris Durham, Richard Sherman. Everybody else was kind of like, nobody thinks these guys are going to be anything. Like,
they drafted James Carpenter, and I called Brock, and Brock didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
That was not.
They cut to Nick Saban in the crowd at the draft, and Saban was like, "Wow,
so
James
really,
Carpenter?
So really, the only sort of chalk, so to speak, draft that they had was 2010." Their first draft. And then after that, it got cute and successful. And then maybe for a little while, it got cute and unsuccessful. Is that a fair description of what's happened?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, unconventional. And
so next year, they should have a cute and incredibly successful draft.
Yep.
And then the same with the year after that. And so, you know, we should be looking at 3 years of glory here. If I if I read the tea leaves correctly,
that should be great. It.
They should draft five Hall of Famers in the next 3 years.
Yeah, done. Book it.
Sweet.
Book it.
Sounds perfect. Overall, Brock, I know you like this.
I did. I said to you Monday that I like this group on paper is only compared to 2010, way back then. And obviously the high end of the first round and second round in a draft that had about 13 high end players and then stretched into the 50s or 60s with, I think, possible starters down the road and difference makers, to have higher end quality, higher end real estate, to have not quite Park Place, but to be on that road and to have that opportunity and capitalize on it and maximize it. And yeah, I really did like it. It made me, as you're talking there, and we're going back to 10, 11, and 12, I would say one thought then that I don't know if I entirely flushed as poo-poo, but I certainly didn't give it as much credence as others, was, well, Pete knew these guys. Mm-hmm. Pete knew them better than the rest.
I never gave any credence to that. I don't know. Maybe I should have. I never did.
I didn't. Yeah. But I got to tell you, and this is a totally different universe and totally different scale, but doing the USFL as I'm doing right now, and you have Skip Holtz and you have the college guys right now off to a quicker start than their peers with professional pedigree. And I even asked Skip that. I said, I mean, you've seen a lot of these guys. You've recruited them. Do you think there's an advantage when you built your 45 players? I mean, each team just had a blank canvas of 45 players and a pretty sizable pool. And some went with older veteran NFL pedigree guys and camp guys. And Larry Fedora and Skip Holtz went a little bit more the college route with players they were familiar with to fit a little bit more in their college scheme. And I don't know. It's been over a decade, but I think I actually give that a little more credence of being in living rooms, of being so deeply connected with high school coaches and college coaches, right? To have such deep entrenched relationships in the college game.
I would think that would almost come back to bite you because you're so married to the way somebody was a few years ago rather than recognizing what they've actually done over the course of the
process. To a degree, but then you wanted to then build it not in a conventional NFL manner. Mm-hmm. You wanted to build it in your vision. You wanted Brandon Browner and Richard Sherman, right? And Cam Chancellor before the rest of the league did. And they kind of scoffed at it and laughed at it, right? It was like, eh, good luck. Cam Chancellor, he can't play strong safety in this league at that size. And Richard and Browner can't turn and run with the guys in this league that you need. And, oh, good luck trying to run the ball against the 49ers and be, you know, big bad bully like you were with Reggie Bush and crew at USC. That's not the league. And
for Lendale White, was that the name you were looking for?
Yeah, Lendale White.
Wow. But Brock, couldn't you speak to that? I have to imagine that doing our draft show after a season of you doing college football is a lot easier for you than after you did a season of NFL.
Infinitely easier. Yes.
You've seen all those guys.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, I don't get down to the SEC except for non-conference. But those guys
haven't seen
on.
Any of the guys.
No. But those guys are certainly on every weekend, and you do have familiarity. And my brother was in that conference and have had a lot of conversations and know those coaches well and their programs obviously very well. But yeah, I mean, on draft night, there wasn't a name, certainly in the first round. And had I done the second or third round, there really wasn't anybody other than the dude out of Chattanooga that went to the Patriots at 28. There really wasn't anybody that I at least did not have my eyes on. Okay. And then furthermore, and why I have so strongly stated the case for, did you call him Ken Walker?
Yeah.
Ken?
Yeah.
Well,
big news.
No, he said Ken.
That's what he's
on with Jake and Stacy. He's very serious at Ken, which is weird because it says Kenneth everywhere.
Really?
Everywhere you go, it says Kenneth Walker the 3rd.
He was Kenneth last year.
Now, you want to have your running back be Kenny Walker? That would be pretty sick.
That sounds like a dude with some like long strides and
watch out
moves.
For Kenny Walker.
So Kenny Walker wears number 33.
Oh, yeah.
He could.
He could. Ooh, I could see him at a 20-something.
Do we have numbers yet?
Well, no, not yet. I think
we have crosses 67.
Yeah, which is a good number for him.
It's all right. Yeah, I mean, you play guard in that. I don't know if you want to be a left tackle, but we'll see.
I think he'll be okay. It's not perfect.
It's not.
Had I been doing the NFL?
But Kenny Walker. Long striker.
Kenny Walker the third?
If you get Kenny Walker in space, good luck. You'll
are we both just picturing Kenny Lofton? Is that what's happening here? He's a long strider.
I don't know, but if you get
you're thinking
space,
Kenny Skywalker, Duncan. Maybe. That's what you're thinking.
I might be actually long. Yeah, it actually little, might be yeah. exactly.
But either way, it's going to be Ken Walker.
Yeah, okay. Ken Walker the third. So oof. I've got a series of questions for you, Brock. I've got one, two, four. I got seven questions.
What?
Yep. Seven.
God's number?
Yeah.
My number? What? Titus's number that I put today in football registration for this fall?
You yes.
When
that
I signed
Titus?
Him up? When I signed him up for tackle football? And we had a conversation. So what do you think?
So you didn't just assign it to him?
I didn't just assign it to
but
him.
But you
no.
told him, this is what nope, dad, nope, this nope, is nope. what you know, cousin Sam.
You kind of laid it on like, this is God's number. So yeah. if you want another
but
one, it's
really,
fine.
It's up to you.
I mean, like, there's a lot of good numbers.
He walked
this one's about God.
Walked him through the man cave and walked him past every one of the jerseys hanging up and said, no,
so,
son.
What stands out?
I know
what
six
number?
Is good. I like 12 a lot. Remember, seven's with God. But anyway, right. four's good and two's okay.
Seven Brock, days. Did you wear 11
Uncle
at one
Peyton
point?
Wore number nine.
Seven
okay,
seals, seven trumpets. Yep, there are a lot of them. But yep, go ahead. Okay, so you've got seven.
I just wanted to make sure that Titus had real free will yes. as it came to choosing his own number and that you had no undue influence at all.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Good to
yep.
hear. Okay. Right, you want to hear? I'll give you this. It's all. They're
is there
all,
a ascending order? Is this a priority?
No.
Is this, okay.
It's essentially like who's the best? Who's the best pick? Who's the most questionable pick? Okay. Best value. Highest upside.
All right.
Biggest physical freak. Best fit for their scheme and highest floor, essentially the safest.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So those are the questions. You ready? I just wanted to give you a moment to kind of know what you're dealing with here.
Yep. Let me just pull them up so
right.
I can look
make
at
make sure you
names
got all the names. Right. I don't want to make sure you're prepared for this.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Okay. Uh-huh. Here we go. Brock, what was the best pick the Seahawks made during the draft?
The best pick they made during the draft. Was Charles.
Wrong! Cross. Oh, sorry. I thought we were doing McLaughlin Group.
Oh, excuse me.
I got confused. Sorry. I thought this was McLaughlin. Sorry.
Yep.
Was who?
Was Charles Cross.
Yeah.
An athletic, bona fide left tackle who has the speed and the athleticism. There will be bumps in the road. There will be a learning curve to climb. There will be questions that have to be answered. But when you take 6'5", 315, run 4.9, play against the SEC, the best of the best, play at his best in some of those marquee matchups, and you take him to build the foundation of your team, this is the anti-Jimmy Graham. Don't tell me one thing and do another. This is backing up your talk. You want to build at the line of scrimmage? Commit to it. And obviously, they went further than that after more picks. But yep,
so if you had been on the clock at 9... and everything had gone the way it did, the first 8 players had all been selected. Is that what you would have done?
Yes. Yep. That is what I would have done. I would not have traded down, and outside of it, I would have done as they did, attempted to come up in the draft and take Ikem Ekwonu. That, unfortunately, did not happen. That would have been maybe the only other thing I would have considered.
That was a pretty crushing moment, by the way, when Ekwonu went. That was a bummer. That was the guy, obviously, that I was like, oh, there's a chance. And maybe if the Giants take Evan Neal early and
but
then.
But have you seen Scott Fitterer lately?
I know.
He's a big boy. So he's a big boy.
What is that? Wait,
delete that.
What
delete
does that have
dump
to do
that.
With it?
What is the matter? He's a GM, for God's sake.
How'd he clean that up?
He wanted a big player so that he would look less big? Or what is the implication?
I don't know. That's crazy. Scott Fitterer is a really nice dude. I would like to distance myself from this entire production.
Don't tell me you didn't look at him and think the exact same thing.
I'm not telling you that.
Yes.
I'm not saying anything. I'm not commenting. Sure. I don't want any part
Kyle,
of this line of it.
Howdy.
I'm not taking any more personal shots at anybody ever.
Same thing. When
I don't see a lot of Scott Fitterer, Brock. I only saw him when I was texted a picture of him.
I'm looking
from you.
I'm looking at a picture of him right now. He looks like a tall dude.
He's got something.
Don't, Brock.
Wrong picture.
Stop.
Brock.
Wrong picture.
Yeah, he looks fine.
Anyway, Brock, that's enough. That's
okay,
quite enough.
Sorry,
okay, so I too would have loved to have traded up for Quantum. That wasn't going to happen. Yep. You and I had spent a lot of time on both Jermaine Johnson and on Jordan Davis ahead of time.
Yep.
No thought to take either or trade back and select either one of them or Trevor Penning or anything else.
As far as Jermaine fell, that gives you a pretty good indicator. Not that being like-minded with everybody in the league is always a good thing, but there was certainly a sentiment across the board that something's going on.
Okay.
Either age or, you know, reached a ceiling or some limitations or some injury or something. Something went on there
so
for him to fall.
It's crazy how they all see that the same way. Yep. And so many of the other draft analysts did not. Like, just with that one guy.
Yep.
Like, the draft analysts were pretty on this year.
I know. Everybody mocks the mockers. So right. Oh, look at these.
They did a pretty good job. It wasn't perfect, but there were very few people drafted nowhere near where they were supposed to.
Other than the QBs. Yep.
Other than the QBs. Right. And I think that they, you know, assumed, like everybody did, that NFL GMs were dumb and would take bad QBs early because that's what they do.
Yep.
So, yeah, I okay. So you would have taken Cross. You wouldn't have done either of those other things.
No. No, I don't think so. Although, big man with the sash. The red sash.
I like his red sash. Brock referred to it the other day as a sachet.
Well, he sashayed to the mirror when he put his hat on.
Hey, sachet.
We've been
doing all this work on the house. Do you know what a belly band is for your house?
That's a cummerbund?
Well, for your house, kind of. Yeah, sort of serves the same purpose. Like, if you've got wood grain or something that doesn't go the same way, or there's a little bit of a gap in spacing, and you just run a belly band across, which is essentially a piece of trim that runs all the way across the house.
Gives it a border.
Right, yeah. And it can mask whatever flaw.
Deficiencies.
Or, exactly. And so when I saw it, given his, you know, similarity to a house.
So is that what the cummerbund
I thought it was
does?
Wearing a belly band.
Is the cummerbund to, like, kind of...
Well,
it's
got the thing sticking up, the hole stick up, so that you can slide your you know, opera or play tickets.
Oh,
into
you're
the
gesturing with
bond.
Your hand.
Yeah,
like, what are you? It's really so. That
sounds great. Yeah,
what?
Part of the idea of the cummerbund. Huh. All right, okay. Best pick was Charles Cross.
Yeah,
who was the most questionable pick?
Well, society says Kenneth Walker. Oh, I'm sorry.
Ken. No, I don't care what society says.
Society says
Brock, I don't
want
to hear
Walker.
About society. High society, like the ones wearing the cummerbunds and the going to the
monocle?
That's what they say.
What does Brock Heward say?
I would say Boye Mafe. Mm. Your guy, your favorite.
I do like Boye Mafe.
I would say Boye Mafe, mostly because... There's a little bit of a scare factor, a little bit of a fear factor.
Is it because he's 24?
Nope. It's because he tested incredibly. He's built like a brick house, but you just see one big year of production. And I think I told you about this dinner before our first USFL game. It was really neat. All the Fox executives, all the NBC executives, the NBC folks, Jack Collinsworth and Jason Garrett. And Jason happened to be at our table. And it was fun. I was picking his brain about the draft leading up to it and the process with the Cowboys and all sorts of stuff, like off the record, fun stuff. But he just said, you know, when you go back and you look at it, one of the big lessons, I said, what were some of the significant lessons you learned in that position, in the war room over the years? And he pointed to, there is always, as he looked back at it, been when we stubbed our toe, it's just guys that did not have consistent production. And on one end, you're hearing, and you did on draft day, wow, this is awesome to see him grow and develop over the course of the year so well. And you'd love to see a guy get better. But you would have loved to have seen that freshman to sophomore to junior to senior.
So I hear some of that, and I'll argue on behalf of Boye Mafe.
By the way, you will. You're his mouthpiece.
Are you working for the USFL at all? Are you doing any work with him? I hadn't heard you mention it at all recently. So I wasn't sure if you were doing anything.
It's like this joke is either going one of two ways. Either Brock hasn't mentioned it enough or Salk it was going to be. Because I've never seen it. I don't know. If it's
I just
on.
Wasn't sure because you hadn't mentioned it at all that you were doing some stuff.
Do you know that after the third time it came out of my mouth, I just wrote a note down?
Stop right mentioning here. The USFL.
Yes. No. Nope. Nope. Salk's about ready.
No, you did not.
Yep. I said it's coming.
No.
Yes.
There's no way that's true.
Yep.
All right.
You're about to take a shot. So fired and received. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good night.
Update, by the way, Mariners scored some runs.
Oh, what?
Yeah, home run. Hey, Eugenio Suarez driving in JP Crawford.
Oh, nice.
Got
nice.
Runs on the board.
Good to hear.
Wait, one nice. Run?
Two runs on the board.
Oh, see, they're practically back. All right. Let me try to defend Boye Mafe. Because there is some, we've heard some of this about him. He came to the game late. right? He was not a Pop Warner play since childhood, etc. He had other things going on in his life, and it was really cool talking to him the other day, knowing that, hearing the story of how he, his entire family learned sign language when they were young. Interview. He really is a great interview. Just a nice guy. He sounds kind of like Cliff Averill. He kind of has the same...
They had a lot of, listening to all the calls, where these are a lot of like humble dudes.
Yeah.
Like soft spoken. Well,
and I didn't want to get into it because it was sort of a short interview, 10 minutes while he was like in the car and stuff. It's not the time to bring up the fact that he lost his mom a few years ago on Mother's Day, no less. And, you know, he uses sign language before, excuse me, before every game to you know, send a message to her. And I mean, he seems like a really wonderful guy. We did talk more, though, about him going to Nigeria for a year when he was in eighth grade. Everyone in his family did that for their eighth grade year. By the way, he doesn't speak the language. He can kind of understand it, but he doesn't fully speak it. So, you know, the challenges that come with being, what, 13, 14 years old, maybe, in Nigeria for the first time, dealing with the language that you can't speak. Yeah. I mean, I mean, there's some overcoming of adversity and all of that. And his family sounds just wonderful. I don't know. He just, I really like the guy, although he did lie to me. And I accused him of such. Yeah, he was telling me, because we were talking about that Vikings playoff game where it was like, you know, negative 12. He was like, oh, you get used to it. No, you don't. That's a flat out lie.
No,
that's just a lie. Anyway, he didn't play football until later.
Yep.
There was the argument made at the Senior Bowl where he really shined. And I know the Seahawks put a lot of faith and a lot of stock into what happens at the Senior Bowl and how guys perform there, both in the game and in practice. And the story that came out of the Senior Bowl was, hey, if we coach you to do X, will you do it? And he just did. And he got better.
Yep.
And that he wasn't coached necessarily to do some of the things that have led him to have success in that game. And I'm sure that if I'm Pete Carroll and I believe in my developmental program, as Pete's told us a million times, boy, Mafe sounds like a dream come true.
No question. Absolutely. No question about it.
And he sure sounds coachable.
Yep. You know, all of those things are entirely true. I would say if he was coming from... where did the seventh round pick? How do we pronounce
Lenore
that?
Lenore Rhyme.
Uh-huh. If he was coming from there, if he was coming from, you know, Division II, if he was coming from even Group of Five schools. But he had some good coaching. You know, they do a good job at Minnesota. They put dudes in the NFL there. Like, they've, that, you know, I've been out there. I've seen
Lawrence Maroney. I mean, like, Minnesota is not Michigan.
No. But it's
Marion
not like
Barber. I had forgotten they were in the Big Ten.
Mike. What are we getting?
All right.
The shots you've taken at college athletics this week have been too much.
All right. Sorry.
So I take one little shot at somebody eating a little too much, you know, food and ribs.
Right.
And
but that was personal.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you remind me the last time Minnesota was in the college football championship? I forgot about the last great Minnesota team.
Yeah, no, they won a lot of national titles in the
60s. Yeah, no, I remember that. Yep. Right. Them and Lenore Rhyne, I think, were both big in the 60s.
Yep.
I think my shot is fairly warranted when it comes to Minnesota football. But Pete would believe that he can coach the guy.
Can you teach and coach instincts? That's the question. Well, and, you know, honestly, Aaron Curry is there coaching now, which is great. I'm sure he's going to have his hands on this kid. He's bigger, Mafe was, than Aaron. Aaron was 6'3", 250 coming out of school. Boye, 6'4", 260, running 4.53 and jumping 38 and just doing things that you're not supposed to do at that size. But that would be the question, just instinctively, just those instincts that come with playing in space.
Well,
Aaron Curry
was the number 3 pick in the draft?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This kid is the number 40 pick in the
That's
draft.
Right.
Isn't that where you're supposed to take guys who have a question, even though they might be incredibly talented?
Yeah. Yes. Maybe a little further down. But yeah, that is much safer.
This is
much
roughly
safer.
Where he was mocked. I mean, looking at Dane Brugler and a lot of other people, I mean, everyone seemed to have him kind of in that 35 to 45 or 50 range. I mean, that's where they took him. If I had a question about the pick, it's why not David Ajabo, who was from Michigan and would have, by all accounts, been a top 15 kind of a talent had he not blown his Achilles. Couldn't they afford to wait a year on him?
Yeah, a little different player. Okay. Ojabo would be your straight Leo pass rusher. Mafe is more of your strong side linebacker, pass rusher, much more of what Bruce Irvin
was capable of doing. In the post-interview, where he's like, I like him moving forward toward the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that what Ojabo does, too?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. A little different body type, a little different strength, a little different power. And Ojabo.
I'm sorry.
Like Mafe, honestly, Ojabo, like Mafe, was a one hit wonder.
Right.
And, you know, I had them a couple times and it was like, yep, David had to learn how to work. And that's always a little red flag too. Like Aiden took him under his wing. I actually sat with Ojabo this year. It was fun. He was engaging. He's like, yeah, I wasn't really a pro, you know? And I
that,
just,
you
just,
find that as a red flag? To me, that sounds like a win, like a guy who figured it out.
Yeah. I mean, I would sure love to see that just innate. Like I don't need somebody else's motivation. Like I got that innate, you know, I'm innately wired that way to be great. And I don't need to be in the shadow of Aiden Hutchinson trying to chase him and lift with him and work out with him and be held accountable by him. Because what happens when Aiden Hutchinson is gone and what happens when you get paid? Will you still have that wiring? Will you still have that get up and go? I think that's a fair question.
All right. Well, that's what they ended up
doing. Okay, we're only down to two. We got five to go.
We got all day. What, you got somewhere to be?
Jeez. Yes. All right. I got USFL prep, bro.
You do.
It's non my boards.
24/7. Do you go walking through the airplane holding your USFL boards the same way you would do?
No, just hat, polo, sweater.
All right.
And my Air Force One shoes.
Just fully dressed in USFL gear.
Do you know that like USFL player hat. Of the game each week, they get these hand-painted player of the game, like USFL cool Air Force cool. Ones. So I'm going to get a pair of them. So just so you know.
Sweet. And honestly say, I did not know
that. What was the best value pick they made?
Best value
different,
pick?
Different from best ups, from biggest upside. Mm-hmm. Who was the best value? Meaning a guy that slipped to them, essentially, the farthest that, you know, you think could have been drafted quite a bit higher than he was.
Yeah, two different guys here, splitting hairs. But I think most of the grades, it's Tariq Woolen. There are people that mocked him as a third rounder because, again, just superhuman physical traits at his size and length. And he goes all the way in the fifth round at 153. So from a draft, just pure value, speculation going into it, there were folks that thought, Mike, much like these quarterbacks, well, this league's going to be enamored. And if Al Davis were still around in Oakland and in Vegas, he would have taken Tariq Woolen in the third round. Because you just don't run 4.2 at that height and weight, and especially as smooth as he was doing it. So I would say from just the straight draft board, probably him as far as a football player, probably your seventh rounder, Bo Melton.
Yeah, that was a name I was going to say.
Yep, he's just a captain. He's a gamer. He'll be a special teamer. He'll be your fourth receiver. He will just kind of elevate because unlike maybe that Ojabo conversation, he innately works. You know, we play in a tough program in Piscataway. You go through Hades for a couple years, one of the worst teams in college football. You come back, Shiano comes back, breathes a little life into it. He's a captain. He's a good player. He's just kind of a, I'm not going to say Doug Baldwin because he doesn't have that short area quickness.
Can I give you my comp?
Sure.
Maybe a little Doug and some David Moore. Guy who plays a little bit bigger than he is, right? Seventh rounder who is going to end up making the team, coming up with big catches. He's maybe a little faster than those guys are because I think he's more of a speed guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was sort of where my brain went. Like some of the feistiness of Doug and some of the just playing bigger than he is like David Moore did.
Yep, I think those are fair.
Okay. He's fast.
You got
becoming.
Your eye on him.
I really do, yeah.
You love Boye, but you got to watch on Bo.
Yeah, I was excited about the Boye pick.
Mostly 3-2-3-2-2-2.
Please, God, stop. I like Melton, and here's why. I think that he was completely overlooked because nobody threw him the ball for 4 years at Rutgers, right? He was highly touted out of high school. He had offers to real schools and better schools. He decided to go to Rutgers.
The shots at the half at Big Ten schools that are kind of in the Big Ten.
I mean, like, I'm sorry. I thought Rutgers was a fair, like everyone had agreed.
Next
we can
up,
take
he's
going to
take
at
shots at Maryland. That's going to be great.
Right.
If you come at Maryland football, we all walk out.
I mean, like, I thought these were like commonly agreed upon things that we can all make fun of, no matter how sensitive we are in this society. We can all take shots at things like Rutgers football, right? Isn't that the rule? I thought we had all like tacitly agreed to that together.
Have you been to Piscataway?
No. God, no.
Never.
God, no.
I don't advise it.
So he went to Rutgers because both of his parents went there. He's a double legacy at Rutgers. His dad played football. His mom played basketball. I don't know if that's a familiar sounding situation to you, Brock, but that's the way it went for the Melton family.
Yep.
And he had legitimately better offers than Rutgers and decided to go to Rutgers, where no one threw him the ball for 4 years. I don't know who the quarterbacks were at Rutgers, Brock, maybe you do, but mm-hmm. I don't see them floating around the league these days.
Mm-mm.
So who was the last Rutgers quarterback? It was the guy who played for Detroit.
Well, we had one in Seattle,
was it
too.
White?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
White?
It was the guy here. Teal. Mike Teal.
Mike Teal.
There you go.
That's who it was. It was Mike Teal.
Was it Mr. Green? Was it Mr. White?
Yeah.
Was it Mr. Yeah.
It was Mike Teal. There was Teal. Also a guy, I think, who played for the Lions in the 90s or early 2000s. But, you know, Rutgers has not turned out a lot of quarterbacks. And I remember, I was telling the story the other day, Keyshawn Johnson, when I was, the year that I did that NFL pregame show thing for ESPN Radio, mm-hmm. and I got to be in the war room, and it was very, you know. I mean, I was in their war room in the back, hiding, and I'm very afraid. But a couple, you know, I got to observe things, and I did at some point end up talking to Keyshawn, who I liked, you know, was very nice. And I was asking him about a certain receiver. I forget who it was. And he was like, who threw him the ball? And I was like, well, I mean, the guy hasn't done it. He's like, yeah, but who threw him the ball? And it was a very, obviously, Keyshawn-centric view of the world. But I was thinking about it in regards to Bo Melton. Who threw him the ball for 4 years? How do you know how good he is?
Yep. Very fair. Very fair. And if he had a little, maybe more burst, a little more short area quickness, maybe he comes up in the draft. But yeah, I think he probably settles and answers that question, the best value.
Then who has the highest upside of anyone in this draft?
It's question number four.
Question number four. Who has the highest upside? I mean, I know your answer. It's fine.
Kenny?
Yeah. Is that where you're going to go?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's got the opportunity to make the biggest splash. His cannonball will have a big wake. He'll make just game-changing plays. But it's, I think one of your other questions, I'll get to one of my other answers that will fit better into that hole. But yeah, I mean, I like Ken Walker. Everybody is seemingly, at least in the Twitterverse, is bashed that. You never take a running back that high. But I thought Brady Henderson said to you very well this week, yeah, at 41, same spot in the draft, Dalvin Cook, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good player. And who was the other one? It was Dalvin Cook and...
Yep, exactly. Yes, mm-hmm. That's who it was.
Yep. Who was it? Stop it. Are you playing dumb with me?
No, I just don't remember. I remember Brady said two, and the only one I remembered was
Jonathan Dalvin Taylor.
Yes.
Dummy. Yeah, it was Jonathan Taylor.
Oh, hey, easy.
Not you, me. Oh, I was speaking to myself.
Right. I mean, look, the Seahawks drafted one of the consensus two best running backs. This isn't the same thing as drafting Rashad Penny, who's maybe one of the top five running backs in the draft. Maybe. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing at all. If you're drafting one of the top two running backs in the class, you're going
to
be fine.
Well, and it does kind of go back to the running back thing, where I feel like the adage has been exaggerated. The story of running backs used to be running backs don't matter unless you've got one who does.
Yep.
Right? That running backs 4 through 28 are basically the same, and then on 29 through whatever, not very good. But if you've got one of the three or four at the top, it can really, really matter for your team, because they're difference makers and they touch the ball a lot and they break tackles and they pick up 2, 5, 8, 12 extra yards, depending on what happens. If they got one of the three or four, then it's a great pick at 41.
Yes, it is. And your team, as you said, your team. And your team is going to be built differently than other teams. And your team had that guy for half a decade. And he was durable. And he was reliable. And he was a game changer. And he was a difference maker. And he elevated other people in that huddle. We always looked at the quarterback. Oh, the quarterback's got to be the one to elevate everybody in the huddle. Well, you know who did that at Michigan State from 2 wins to 10 wins? Period. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. He was Kenneth then. But Ken Walker was that guy who did it. And I had, again, probably a little bias, probably a little more emotional attachment, because I had him a couple times and I was at his walkthrough and I watched. He was the guy that when he came in the building, the whole temperature changed. The whole practice environment changed. Like, look at that dude. I mean, he was just the thoroughbred. He was the difference maker. And then on the field, single-handedly put his team on his shoulders to beat Michigan with, what, 4 rushing touchdowns, and run through Ojabo and run through their linebackers and run by their safeties and run 4.38 at the combine, which you're not supposed to do with his size and power and strength. So, yeah, I love that one, as you know, at 41.
Who's the biggest physical freak?
Got a bunch of them, man. I mean, it's it's Tariq Woolen. When you're that height and length, and going back and watching his movement, right? All of these guys, I mean, that's a tough one because they're all freakish in their own way. Charles Cross looks like he weighs 225. Boye Mafe, you can't chisel anymore. Ken Walker, as I just said, has legs and thighs for days running 4.38. Those three are right there competing. But when you just watch the pure physical freakish traits of Tariq Woolen running, you're not supposed to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. I remember just as much as Pete Carroll saying to you, Salk, like Aaron Donald, 284.5, I just as vividly remember him talking about big corners not being able to turn it over and not being able to run and be as smooth in and out. And yeah, that 4.240 was redunculous. Like it just, that's not, you're not supposed to look that smooth doing it.
So, you know, there's a lot of comps on Tariq Woolen. Richard Sherman is the one that people are going to point to the most for obvious reasons, right? Similar size. He's a little bit taller.
Former receiver, flipped over late,
the fifth round. So that's the obvious comp, and that's the best one. There are probably two other comps that people don't want to hear, right? One of them would be Trey Flowers, right? Mm-hmm. Another guy who converted, although in his case, he came from safety. Or Therald Simon would be the other, another guy who was really tall and long and lanky and all of that, and they thought it would really work out, and he'd be Sherman 2 on the other side, and he did not have the head for that whatsoever. Nope. How do you measure where you would expect Woolen to be amongst those sort of three potential outcomes with, you know, potential Hall of Famer Richard Sherman, a complete disaster in Therald Simon, and to be fair to Trey Flowers, somewhere in between, right? Was an NFL starter at times, played okay in Cincinnati, not a bad player, just didn't quite live up to
and
what
resigned
they were
there
he
and
would
won
do.
A Super Bowl there and contributed there.
And I think Trey Flowers is okay, and so I'm kind of putting him in the middle. So how do you comp Woolen amongst those three?
Yeah, give me Trey Flowers just kind of football grit and toughness, and give me Woolen's athleticism, and you'll get Richard Sherman. So he doesn't right now as a football player, I think, have any of that. He has just pure athleticism. Mm. He reminds me in some ways, and I don't want to disparage a former teammate, but it, you know, in college we had a guy that could run like the wind.
Olin Krutz?
No.
Okay, just curious. I've heard he had a... You don't want to disparage him at all.
No, no, we will not do that.
Okay, good.
No, and he was a track guy, and he just didn't love football. Mm. And he made splash plays, and when you watched him run, Mike, it was like you stopped. You wanted to watch him run and say, gosh, why does gravity affect me so much? And it doesn't affect him. He just has a you know, like Joey Galloway. It's just not.
Is that Hooker? What was his name?
Yeah. Jawarren Hooker. But he just never loved football. I mean, it's just not his deal. Like, he just didn't want to. And wasn't, you know, in some ways, it was unfair to him. Like, oh, yeah, he's going to be our answer at receiver. And we worked out all summer and did all of that. And man, he could run a go route. He took a kickoff at Arizona to the house, and he covered 5 yards. Really fast guys cover 5 yards in 2 strides. Like, he covered 7 yards in 2 strides. Like, it was just. He was world class 100 meter, legit international world class. And to me, that's kind of how I look at Tariq. Just watch him. You're a track guy. You're not even a receiver.
But you're not saying you don't know that he doesn't love.
But I don't know that. Right. Nope. I do not know that. But I know that he fell to the 150 something pick because I think there are a lot of people like, yeah. Yeah, but I don't know if he's a football player. Well, they're going to get to find out, and he's going to get an opportunity, and he's going to be coached by a Pete Carroll that has certainly taken on projects like him. And those projects did not have the twitch and the speed and the quickness that he does.
Who is the best fit to their scheme?
Abe Lucas.
I've Brock down. I've been right on.
Well, this is why we would have killed the draft, Mike. I mean, this is why you and I basically could have done this draft and taken all of these picks and been applauded for it.
That concerns me. Too much groupthink.
It could be. Why is Abe Lucas the best fit to their new scheme?
He is just a bona fide right tackle. I don't think I'd love him at left tackle in the league, foot speed wise, but Right tackle, sign me up, man. Is it? It's Rob Havenstein is the offensive tackle for the Rams. Been to Super Bowl, won, you know, two Super Bowls, won one of them. Been a great player for them. There is nothing that Rob Havenstein has that Abe Lucas doesn't have, other than that Rob played at Wisconsin for 4 years and knew how to leverage a little bit more and put his hand in the ground. And if you have some consternation about Charles Cross because of the system he played in, well, that's basically the one Abe Lucas played in. Went from the air raid to the run and shoot, a little bit more run in the run and shoot than he certainly had with Mike Leach. But, you know, he will have to make some of the same leverage, you know, movement, angles, hand placement, some of the same transition that his left tackle will. But, man, he has got absolutely every good you want. He's got the power. He's got the arm length. He's got the heavy hands. He's just a mauler, and he's going to be able to turn people and move people on those edges like you've got to do in this system.
Yeah, so, you know, I led off the show Monday with this, and you and I have talked a little bit about it. It sure felt in general as if this draft was very much about a commitment to the schemes that they're now running, whether it was Shane Waldron and the need for more athletic tackles on both sides, or whether it was the defense going to a 3-4 and Mafe, etc. It sure feels like this was a real show of confidence in the style of both offense and defense their coordinators want to play.
I would agree. And if you've got, you know, younger coordinators and more on the inexperienced end of coordinators, Clint Hurt will be a first-time play caller, defensive coordinator, and Shane Waldron learned a bunch on the job. I think he would tell you that, you know, that there was no substitute, and we knew that for experience. And then the chop and the turbulence of losing, you know, Russell for 6 weeks within his learning curve of a season, you better empower those coordinators. You better give them the kind of guys that, you know, fit. You don't have to put a, you know, square peg in a round hole that, this is what we want. This is what I need. I need guys that can really move, that are sub 5 flat guys at my 2 offensive tackles. I need some power and strength, that strong side backer. And they did it in free agency too, Mike. I mean, this wasn't just the draft.
Yeah, Nwosu's about probably that. A good example of that, right?
Yep, exactly. Okay, number 7.
Last one, and actually of all of them, this is the one that was hardest for me to predict which one you would say. I have a guess, but who was the safest pick they made? Essentially, who has the highest floor? Doesn't mean he's going to necessarily be a star, but a guy that you'll be willing to bet he kicks around the NFL for a while. Like, he's a pro.
I'd probably say Abe Lucas.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I thought you might say Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, he's right there. I mean, they're looking their right draft, you know, third round.
And by the way, it's unfair to say Charles Cross on this one. Like, it seems almost guaranteed that guy will be a pro, right, at his athleticism.
Well, you're top 10. You're going to get multiple opportunities for a lot of years.
So kind of almost take him out of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was guessing you might say Kobe Bryant. But all right, Abraham Lucas there.
Yeah, just big, you know, physical, powerful men, they tend to. And he was super, super durable. He's just built. You just look at him and shake his hand and just look at the body type and structure. And you're like, yeah, you look like a 10-year right tackle in the NFL. You know, you're not going to be asked to play left tackle and, you know, play against the elite, though, you know, as much as people move around D linemen and edge rushers, you're still going to have to be a pass blocker, but he would probably be the safest. I'll be fascinated to see Kobe Bryant. So if there was an eighth one of just like intrigue, who's the most intriguing to you? I think it's him to be the Jim Thorpe Award winner. I'd be curious. And, you know, tomorrow when we chat on your morning show, I'll do a little homework. I'm curious to look at the last, or maybe Howdy, you can pull this up right now. Give me the last 10 Jim Thorpe Award winners, or maybe even the last 15.
I looked some of these up, actually. Justin and I were looking through them the other day. Like, Deion Sanders was a Jim Thorpe Award winner.
Charles Woodson.
Yeah, Charles Woodson.
Multiple times.
There have been a couple of really great players, and then a few where you don't really know who they are. But I would say it's probably leans towards good players.
Have they been starters in the league? Do you have it pulled
Grant
up right
Delpit,
there?
Yep. DeAndre Baker, Minka Fitzpatrick, Adoree Jackson, Desmond King. Go back a little ways, Morris Claiborne, Patrick Peterson, Eric Berry, Malcolm Jenkins.
I mean, some of those are
it's a pretty good list of names.
All pro players.
And there's some others in there that you don't know as much about, that either didn't make it in the league or were never supposed to.
Not very many, though.
No, I mean, there's a lot of guys that did. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, that list,
probably
right.
Probably 2 out of 3 hit.
DeAndre Baker was our buddy's friend, right, at the party? Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, so he was.
Yep. He's been a problem. That was a miss by the old Thorpe, board who made
Jim
that pick.
Thorpe who made the miss.
No, Jim didn't miss. He had nothing to do with that. Yeah. But the board that
shots at Jim Thorpe now.
Jim's
really gained some weight. And made a lot of mistakes in this award show here.
But he'd be the one. I don't think many of those were fourth rounders. As you rattled most of those names off. In my memory, I don't know how many of those even got beyond the second round. I think most of those guys were first or second rounders. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't as if this year did not have DBs that were good, because they went 3 and 4 in this draft at corner and Stingley and Sauce Gardner.
How did he win the Jim Thorpe Award over two guys that went in the top four and another guy who went later in the first round? The safety went to Baltimore. How is he the best defensive back in college football?
That's a great question. And he's the antithesis of some of these other guys. He was not a one-hit wonder. He was years of production. He was right at the core of them turning that thing at Cincinnati as a core player, as a difference maker.
Captain himself.
Exactly. So I think he had that track record, right? You had heard his name in college football the last 2 or 3 years. Number one, because the name is familiar. Number two, the story behind the name. But most importantly, his production in turning Cincinnati with Desmond Ridder, with Sauce Gardner, with 9 dudes drafted. How about that? Luke Fickell in Cincinnati, 9 guys drafted from the University of Cincinnati this year. And yeah, I think he just got, bypassed by a quarterback, got bypassed by a saucy, charismatic corner, got bypassed by some of his peers, but all the while he was a captain cornerstone piece of that. Well,
good answers, Brock. I want to let you know.
Oh, thank you.
You can beef up your business meetings. I don't know if you have any of those with the league that you're working with these days. You hadn't mentioned it at all. Maybe you have business meetings. You can do so with Famous Dave's. They're famously Sawsome Catering. You just mentioned saucy, right? Sawsome Catering. It's ideal when you want your meetings or your event to be delicious, memorable, and maybe most importantly, stress-free. Customized for delivery, pickup, or full service, the Famous Q is designed to allow you to kick back, crush a little classic Q, whether you're driving into a brief or whether you're diving into a beef brief, either one, or digging into a brisket, whatever it is. Just think about going whole hog and some St. Louis-style spare ribs, cornbread muffins, or Georgia chopped pork, all the while nodding agreeably like Howdy does at a PowerPoint presentation. That's the dream, right? From their smoking starters and fresh salads to barbecue bundles and feasts, Famous Dave's slow-cooked goodness is there to add some flavor to your work schedule. Full details at FamousDaves.com. All right, Brock, fun, really sort of great draft insight. And honestly, this was a more fun draft than I've remembered for a while. I think partly just because I was more invested with the number 9 pick and all of that. But just, it was cool. And I will say, some of the reaction I love, some of it annoys me. I could live without people being like, oh, I love the Seahawks draft because it's much more in line with what the pundits think. Well, that's not a good reason to like a draft. Because it was similar to what Mel or Todd or Daniel Jeremiah or somebody else thought. That's not fair. That's not a good reason to like a draft. Mm-hmm. I like it because they got big guys early, small guys late, because they got some players that seem to really fit into their scheme, and because it sort of gives them this opportunity now to move forward, albeit without a franchise quarterback, and that becomes sort of the next huge question. And you and I talked a little bit about it this week, and I wrote about it this week at SeattleSports.com. I'm not mad at him from not taking a quarterback. I would have been excited if they did. You and I kind of talked about it last week, because it would have told me that they loved the quarterback.
Can you imagine had they taken Malik Willis at 9?
It would have been super exciting.
Knowing that in the real world, Malik Willis went in the 70s.
I know. Yeah, I only would have been excited about it because they would have had enough conviction.
Right.
And I don't think John would have bothered if he didn't have great conviction. In fact, I know he wouldn't have because he didn't.
Yep.
Right. I mean, even needing a quarterback, they opted not to do it. But now you find yourself in this situation where, they have Drew Lock, they've got Geno Smith. If they want Baker Mayfield, I suppose that's a possibility. It doesn't seem like that's something they actually want to do. Maybe they're just, positioning on that and they'll try to get him at the end of the day. But
they have Levi Lewis.
They have Levi Lewis and another guy too. I'm blanking on the other kid's name. I'm going to go over to rookie minicamp this weekend, so I'll get to watch him a little bit. But what are they doing? What's the plan? It's wait till next year, right? Where you've got at least 3 quarterbacks that everybody seems to love right now, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Bryce Young, you've got
CJ Stroud,
and you've got the kid from Kentucky. Levi's. How do you pronounce his name?
I think it's Levis. Will Levis.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if it was Levi's, like the jeans. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I mean, you've got three anyway, and maybe a couple of more who could slide into the first round. Is that the plan?
Yes. Yeah, and as uncomfortable as it made people and Seahawks fans and pundits or the Seahawks Twitter that they would take a running back by the name of Ken with the 41st pick, it makes them infinitely more uncomfortable that they're going at it with Geno and Drew Lock. Drew Lock? Really? That is their plan moving into this season. You're trying to sell on one end. You're not rebuilding. But on the other end, you know, I think the huge narrative and the voice of the fan says, yeah, come on. Even the voice of Mike Salt, come on.
It's the voice of anyone. I mean, I talked to Dane Brugler this week from The Athletic, who I think does, honestly, the best job in sort of writing about the draft leading up to it. He does it as well as anybody. And he's like, well, you could tell me whether you're rebuilding based on who's in your quarterback room. Right, your quarterback room is Drew Lock, Geno Smith, and Jacob Eason.
So fair to say in 2011 with T-Jack and Charlie Whitehurst, they were still rebuilding?
I think they were still building. I mean, honestly, right? Yep. No, they were. They were rebuilding.
I mean, 2010 was Matt Hasselbeck.
They were going for the playoffs at that point.
They had moved on from Matt Hasselbeck, and mm-hmm. they had a bridge year, right? I mean, how else to say it? They had a bridge year with Tavares Jackson, and then they brought in two other guys the next year, Russell Wilson and Matt Flynn. We know the history. At least you and I do. I mean, we are getting to a point, Brock, where the kids who were just drafted don't even know the history.
Correct.
Right? I mean, like, your boy, Kobe Bryant, or Tariq Woolen, rather, was like, oh, yeah, my parents told me about those Legion of Boom guys. Like, all right.
Amazing.
Tone it down,
Tariq. Well, he was 12.
I know. But I don't know. To me, this is a rebuild. But that word will not ever escape Pete Carroll's mouth because it's not in his vocabulary. He won't do it. He won't say it. The very idea. I haven't talked to Pete about this, but I'd be willing to bet if we could have an off the record conversation with Pete and asked him about the idea of tanking and what happened in Miami or Cleveland or anywhere else where there have been some legitimate allegations of tanking, that Pete would spit on the ground at the very idea.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
it's just he can't fathom it. It doesn't compute in his
whatever
mind.
That look was in his eye, in the ire in his being, when you challenged him as to why in the world is Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman returning punts in the preseason.
Stop making that sound so bad. It was not, you big liar.
And he looked
at you. You are such an exaggerator.
Like Medusa. He was ready to turn you to stone.
That is so wrong. You are such a liar.
How dare you, Michael Salk?
Yeah.
Or are you going to rest your starters?
Stop
or are
it.
You going to right?
Done? Are you quite done making
all
up these
the
lies?
Time that you challenge Pete's stop competitive
just
will?
Stop. Just stop. Just stop. That is enough. Same Pete Carroll, by the way, rested all starters all preseason this year. Just
right.
want to make sure we're clear.
That same
Pete.
Guy.
Okay, uh-huh. good.
That same
you,
man, guy.
You guys are really wrong about this.
About what? The quarterback thing?
Yeah.
What is it?
Because they're going to go get another quarterback
this year.
This year.
Baker Mayfield?
It will probably be Baker Mayfield, and I won't be surprised if it's Sam Darnold, but they're going to go get another quarterback because they signed a bunch of one-year free agents and a bunch of two-year free agents in their mid-30s. Like, what are they doing? This is not... You're going to compete with that kind of a line? Like, why are you not even saving cap space? It doesn't make any sense
at
all.
I think there is an argument to be made that you're right and that they're playing possum right now with Baker or whatever because this is the team that tried for Deshaun Watson. If you were rebuilding, you don't go after Deshaun Watson, right?
They got on a plane to try and convince Peyton Manning to come to them.
That's right.
Because he wouldn't even talk to them. Yeah, they're going to go get Baker Mayfield. Yes, they're going to get another quarterback.
Howdy.
I don't know that they want Baker the same way, though.
Howdy, if they do not, okay, I'm going to remember this podcast.
Of course, yeah, it'll go down in the annals with all the other
On the May the 4th be with you. I will never forget this podcast. Mm-hmm. And Drew Lock is starting week one, and none of those guys are to be heard of. You are getting all of us famous Daves. You are getting all of us some George Chop.
No, make him get us some Ascend Prime. What are you talking about?
There you go.
Yeah. Can you imagine Howdy shelling out to get all of us Ascend Prime?
No, I can't. No,
hey, Howdy,
I can't.
You got to buy us all steaks. Can you imagine?
No, I would not do that to Boy Howdy either. But I would make him get us some George
famous
Chop.
Q?
Uh-huh.
I'll get you some.
I'd make him drive, in fact, to the Ghost Kitchen.
No.
You and
scary.
Kyle. With Kyle the
I'll
whole time
Kyle.
Going, ooh.
Yeah. Kyle's
pull
not
up,
going in there. there.
No way.
Tito's Kitchen.
I'll go if Kyle walks in that room with
no chance.
They might have birds in there.
Here is a thought. Here is a thought and a question that I have not raised yet. I'm kind of proud of myself that it came to me amidst all my USFL prep. Even this thought could come to me. Who going into their respective season is a starter? And I'm going to say that's Drew Lock right now. I'm going to say if they played Sunday, that they would want him to be the starter. Maybe Geno's better and beats him out and everything else. But as of right now, and may the fourth be with you, I think their hope would be that it's Drew Lock going into a season. Who do you think is a better player, Tarvaris Jackson in 2011 or Drew Lock in 2022?
T-Jack.
You think so?
Yeah. They're both second-round picks. By the way, all three of these guys, second-round picks.
Yep.
I was looking that up. Tarvaris Jackson, Geno Smith, and Drew Lock
yep.
were all second-round
picks.
Now, T-Jack had been hurt. I mean, that was sort of his thing, right? He had been kind of in and out of the lineup in Minnesota.
A little bit. And Brad Childress, the coordinator, loved him. They took him in the second round.
Right.
They gave him ample opportunities to start.
Yep.
I mean, he had a bunch of starts. And you know what? Drew Lock, I'd be curious, actually. I know that Drew, I think, had 16 starts or so here in six his rookie year, couple this year, I think 10 the year. Yeah, I think he had like 16, 20 starts, probably similar to T-Jack. So I think T-Jack had more starts than Drew Lock. Brad Childress believed in him, but ultimately it just, you know, the consensus of Minnesota, just not a franchise quarterback. Just not elite. The consensus in Denver after 16 to 20 starts. Yep.
I think it's a hard question to answer, Brock, because I think the answer is the same. But the decision has sort of been made on all these guys, not franchise quarterbacks. And you know, Drew Lock had the opportunity in Denver. Geno Smith had the opportunity in New York and in San Diego and here in Seattle. And Tarvaris had the opportunity in Minnesota.
Yep.
They're not franchise quarterbacks. They can come in and they can win you a couple of games. Maybe they're decent backups. But they're not starting caliber playoff quarterbacks, any of them. Tarvaris, I think, had some leadership and some, you know, toughness to him.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he played through a torn pec while he was here that year.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
I think, and I don't want to get into what happened in his personal life after he was gone. And obviously, you know, the fact that he's no longer with us is incredibly sad. But, you know, just as a player at that time, gritty leadership, got the most out of himself, even though maybe he wasn't as talented. And I don't know whether I get the same rep from the other two guys. Not that they're not likable in their own way,
mm-hmm.
but I don't get that same leadership. Everybody follows them. They've got the toughness, the physical ability to just grit their way through anything. I don't know if I get that from the other two guys.
Yep,
And I shouldn't say I get it. I don't mean like I'm like feeling it. I mean hearing it and talking to people who have been around them, etc. I've never heard any of that. In fact, we've heard kind of the opposite of, hey, everybody likes them, but no one really believes in them.
Yeah. Well, I think Geno got punched on a bench, right?
It was like right in front of Jake.
And I
imagine Jake's face to be like inches from him as the fist is coming through the air. And there's Jake wide-eyed like, cool, like right in front of him. That's how I imagine that story.
And I think in Denver, I think they would say that Drew just kind of had a little immaturity, a little too big for his britches. People didn't really like him dancing. He kind of had a...
I've never heard too big for his britches. I've heard just more likable guy, but just they didn't believe in him.
Ultimately, they didn't believe in him. Mm-hmm. Yep, ultimately. But even his rookie year, right? He went 5-1, and I think there were some people pretty excited, actually. Like, wow, you know, he'd gotten hurt in preseason, and they were kind of a mess, and he came in and played really well. And then there was some built-up kind of hope for year number two, and year number two fell radically flat and short.
So I just, to me, I think, Pete, Howdy, if they could get a Baker Mayfield or someone like that, I don't know about Sam Darnold, but okay, fine, maybe him. Okay. Like, I think they would pull the trigger on the guy that they liked because you're right. They believe they can win right now. It's like in Pete's DNA. If it doesn't happen, Pete's not going to throw the worst quarterback out there to try to lose games. He doesn't believe in that.
Nope.
He will try to win because I honestly believe he thinks if you get all the way to the bottom, and God forbid you do it on purpose, you can never get the culture back that you're trying to build.
Correct.
Because it is so anathema to his personality, to his philosophy, to everything he's built his program on. He can't do it. He won't do it. He doesn't want any part of it. And he doesn't view it as we're waiting until next year to get the quarterback. But John's like, hey, we're waiting until next year to get the quarterback. It's just, we're not going to waste a pick on somebody. So he probably, if I had to imagine how this was going behind the scenes, John probably has to talk Pete up about the guys he is taking and hope that he forgets that he's not taking a quarterback or convince Pete that he loves the guys that he's got, which is why they don't need Malik Willis or whomever else. And then next year, when they have the number 7 pick or whatever, you go get the kid Levis from Kentucky.
Okay, a couple things there. Did you say what word did you use?
I used that? Philosophy. Don't even get after me.
Don't even come here. I may use this on the sideline Saturday in the USFL. What did you say? Anathema?
Anathema. It's anathema to him. Yes.
It's anathema to him.
Anathema. Yes.
Like just spit out of my mouth.
Yeah. Anathema is something that it doesn't agree with you. You can't even fathom it.
It's pretty much like that stuff I had to drink the day before my colonoscopy.
That stuff was also anathema to you.
To every system. It doesn't agree with any system, and that therefore it is flushed out of a system.
Larry Salk favorite, by the way. Larry Salk loves the anathema. Anathema to me. Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I may have to incorporate that. Okay, secondly, and I said this to you at some point on your morning show this week, I think they're going to give Drew... They certainly know Geno inside and out and got to see him start last year and everything else. So they don't have to learn anything about him in April, May, and June. But they do get a chance here, and it started 3 weeks ago with the opening of the offseason. And now they're actually out on the field, right? The first 2-3 weeks is all in the weight room and guys out on their own. But now they're out there, and I saw that they actually kind of, this and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but, they flipped a little of their schedule around. And did you notice that they put their mandatory mini camp halfway through?
I did see that. Why do you think they did that?
Instead of at the very end? I mean, the speculator in me says, I think they really want to see. I think they really want to get, more of a book. And I think they really want to make that judgment. So if a Sam Darnold, if a Baker Mayfield... If one of those situations were to arise, or they were to say, and who knows when Baker will ultimately be released, then maybe, we get a full gauge with full team, full one-on-ones, full competitive environments in that mandatory camp with everybody there. We get a much fuller read of Drew Locke than we would if we waited to the very end of it. And again, that's 1,000% speculation.
No, but it's just using logic. It makes a lot of sense. I think that makes a ton of sense.
And logic is not anathema to me.
No. DK going to be there?
Better be there.
Of course.
A mandatory?
Of course he'll be there.
He'll for sure be a mandatory. He's not going to get them in his pocket. He's not there right now?
I didn't say that. I was just curious. Because he seems to be pretty positive that things are going to work out. Pete's talking in a really positive way. Do you think things will work out with DK and the Seahawks? Or do you think that we're going to see a holdout, hold in, whatever?
That does not feel like DK year 3. That was Bobby year 9. Mm-hmm. That was Cam after Super Bowl.
We haven't had really anybody hold out or in before their second contract, right? Only before their third. I was talking about that today. I can't think of a player. Maybe you can come up with one. Has there been a player in Pete's tenure that has been unhappy with the team leading into their second contract, like their first re-signing? I can't remember anybody. Mm-mm. They've had some issues down the road, right? Whether it was Cam or Earl or Marshawn. I mean, there have been issues eventually. Yep. But I can't think of anybody who didn't want a second contract to stay with the Seahawks.
Right. Certainly not. DK's only 24.
I know.
25? That would feel uncharacteristic.
I mean, he's out here talking about how much he believes in Geno and Drew Locke and all of that.
He already showed up to something that was optional earlier in the offseason.
He is playing this very differently from his peers in his draft class, that's for sure.
Yep.
Why do you think that is?
Late second round pick. They believe in him. They traded up to go get him. Maybe. They've grown
loyalty.
Him.
Loyalty.
They've developed him. He had a QB and a franchise QB that, helped him grow into an enormous brand and enormous success. And he doesn't forget where he comes from. Football
That's
dad.
A great answer.
Football family, kind of, Ole Miss. He didn't have a career like he's had in Seattle. They didn't develop him like they have in Seattle. And I think there's probably, some, I don't even know if it's loyalty, but an appreciation for the growth that he has made that he did. He had to be in the bubble, you know, at 7 o'clock at night when I was in there on a Tuesday night catching tennis balls. And, you know, he had to take those extra strides right. And he had to put the work in. But I don't think he forgets that they went up and got him, that those tears on draft day, he hasn't forgotten. Right, that you believed in me, and it was about time that someone pulled the trigger. So, that would be anathema to my belief in DK if he were to hold out.
I bought some tennis balls the other day. I told you I'm teaching Cecily how to throw and catch. So I went to Dick's Sporting Goods, and I bought a can of tennis balls, which I hadn't done in, I don't know, 30 years or so. I mean, like, I can't tell you the last time I bought a can of tennis balls. It's been a while since I played tennis.
Wendell didn't go chase those down?
He can't, unfortunately. His jaw's not large enough to get a tennis ball in there. So he tries, but he ends up just sort of pushing the thing around the floor. I know, he's got a smushed-in face. It's not his fault. Don't laugh at him.
Sorry.
That is enough. Don't laugh at poor Wendell. That darn dog fell off the bed today. I mean, like, give him a break.
No.
Give him a break. So they have two types of tennis balls, right? So Penn is, like, the ultimate tennis ball maker, right?
P&N.
And they have the one can that's like $6 a can for like super felt or something. And then one that's like $2 a can for like regular felt. There's like a huge price difference, like two or three times. When DK's out there working with a tennis ball, do you think they get him the good tennis balls? Or do you think that just any old tennis ball will do since he's not playing tennis?
Well, I know which bottle you bought.
Well, to teach Cecily how to throw?
Yes.
I think you do, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you gave her the highest quality.
I don't think she's playing tennis with it, so I think it's just fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're just probably putting the cheap ones in the jugs machine, too. Yeah.
And the Seahawks, though, don't they go first class for everything? Maybe they've got, like, fancy Dunlop balls.
You never know.
I kind of want to know the answer to this now. Yeah. We'll see if we can figure that out when I get out to rookie minicamp. That'll be the important question on my mind. All right, we got to run. Brock, there's a ton of fun. Great draft conversation. Hopefully the Mariners will score a few more runs and when they come back home, and we'll have some more fun talking about them next week. Until then, the hay
is in the barn.
See everybody.
This is the chopper!